Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Tori, only on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning, welcome to the show. God, I'm so happy. I don't know why I'm so like uppity this morning. I didn't actually get a lot of sleep, Tori, but I don't know, maybe it's the lack of sleep that's making me like...
Are we manic this morning?
Sort of getting there, okay. I would say, so I better calm down a little bit.
Okay, let's take a breath.
Yeah, there you go. Good morning, everybody. Today is Thursday, March 9th, and as we're heading for the weekend... The weather's definitely getting hotter out here.
I mean, it's like 80 degrees yesterday.
Right? Yeah.
And then I was like, do I have to get my toes done? Because some girl was walking around in flips, and I was like, my toes are like an ogre. And I, because when it's winter, you don't notice your toes.
Care, right?
Yeah. And now I'm like, damn, girl, I got to get the chainsaw out. Yeah, I got to work on my toes. So awesome. I might go to the beach later.
Yeah?
Yes.
You're just sharp. I see a jacket and everything.
Is I know. Usually I do show up looking a bit like I possibly have rolled out of bed.
Sometimes.
And today was a little different.
Yeah. I mean, when you wear a jacket, I notice.
Yeah. when you don't look homeless.
Over the screen here, you know.
Sometimes it's a lazy day. Today, a little sharper.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we have an exciting guest. We're going to get to her in just a few minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I'm just thinking that, what did I want to say? I mean, there was something that, well, I'm just like, yeah, when I'm in a good mood, I'm in a good mood, you know. So it just so happens that I'm in a great mood this morning, almost jumping out of my skin. And you know what? There's no reason. So it might be in the air. I don't know. Maybe it's the summer.
What a lot of it is? You know what you could be? A spring fever bunny hopping.
Yes, yes.
I don't know what that's. I'm Jewish. I don't know the Easter thing, but it's bunny spring something.
I do know that I get more depressed when I'm in the winter.
Yeah, and this is hot
right.
for you. Maybe
this
it's
is hot.
The
days are getting longer, you know, things like that.
There
so maybe that's it,
hey.
You know.
Hoppy spring bunny fever.
Yeah, so look how I'm going to be bouncing off the walls.
Okay,
soon.
All right, I'll take it down a notch.
There
then.
You go, right?
Even it out.
So let's see what's going on. God, I had a lot of things to talk about, but we'll get to all that. I wanted to bring up the fact that this passenger on an airplane caused an entire flight to divert to L.A. They were on the way to Hawaii because he didn't want to pay $12 for a blanket. So he was really pissed, and he started fighting with the
flight
attendant.
Oh, my God. I have, like, three things to say. One, sucks that you were going to Hawaii and ended up in L.A. Aloha,
right.
Your dreams. Mm-hmm. And then two, oh, my God, $12 for a blanket? That
right?
is absurd. But
and he did complain. He says, it's freaking cold in here. What do you want me to do, you know?
And so he just, like,
freaked
out?
But apparently, yeah. But
pay the damn thing. Oh, my goodness.
But they're not really describing that he freaked out. He just was confronting maybe this flight attendant.
You know, the so lines the crew, are, yeah, if you even, like, confront a little bit of a flight attendant, it's over, man.
Yeah,
you gotta
right?
protect your crew. But, man, that is quite expensive.
It is. It
$12 is more than, like, I can down a couple little mini vodkas before I get to $12.
That's true.
Right?
That's true. But when you're on a plane, you don't start something
for
like this, right?
No, you don't. Obviously, you're a human being. You're
right.
not. You're a civilized adult. But right. you know what? That is kind of crazy.
It is, you know.
Damn.
But, I mean, I think they went overboard when they diverted the flight. I mean, after they landed, they said that the man did not pose any serious threat and there was no crime committed.
He didn't? Okay. Well, that's weird.
Right.
Huh.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think he
you don't know, though. Well,
anybody.
He could have said one sentence to that crew member, and if she felt threatened or he felt threatened, it's over. That's
right.
it. You tell the pilot it's his or her discretion.
Right. Exactly.
You can't right. joke around with people who... You don't know how fast people get on airplanes.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it seemed to be cold, so maybe that was really frustrating.
I know.
Weird.
But just imagine being a passenger on this plane and going, what the hell is going on, man?
Especially you're probably going to your honeymoon.
Yeah,
or something.
So much for your trip, you know?
That sucks.
So people are crazy. Staples stores are closing 70 more locations. And as we continue seeing the demise of the
Radio Shack,
brick and mortar.
Yeah, Radio Shack went bankrupt again today.
For the second time, right?
Turned out I didn't know they were still there.
I know. Why are they still there?
Yeah, I think it's because of Shack. It doesn't sound very good. No.
Right?
I know. It's just people are going to Amazon that.
Right.
You know?
I think they're only... reason for being is they're still like in malls, so they get some walk by traffic.
Have you ever been
like
to a mall recently? It's kind of like a sad feeling.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, no. I mean, I agree. I do go to the mall, but I don't really take my time there.
Yeah.
I might go just to one store quickly, yeah, get something. But you're right.
It's kind of a funny, like, it smells like Cinnabon and like sadness.
Right. Because there's not anything there other than women's clothes, really.
Yeah. It's like candles and Forever 21. Right. Yeah. There's not a lot.
For women, there's a lot of knickknacks and shit like that. That's nice, you know. But otherwise, you're right.
Because Brookstone, what are you going to head to? Brookstone or the Sharper Image?
Right.
Sitting that weird
massage
chair.
They're barely there, too.
They're barely there.
You always wonder how they make money anyway. Nobody ever buys anything.
Are they selling that chair? Is anyone buying that massage chair that we've all sat in?
I know. I don't think so.
God.
They have amazing things, but they're only interesting. You wouldn't spend money on
those
things.
No. You're like, do you want a flying drone that blinks?
Yeah, you don't really need that.
No. But you get it for your dad every Father's Day. Because, like, what else do you get your dad?
That's true, right? So at least there's great gift ideas in those stores.
Yeah, yeah.
That's where I'll go next time if they still exist. Yeah. But then again, you've got Amazon, you know?
I know, but see, that's terrible because that's the anti-capitalism.
That's how we destroyed
our monopoly. That's terrible, yeah.
And we, with our own hands, destroyed ourselves.
You should try and go to your mom and pop store. That's what you should do.
Right, but who's going to spend that kind of money? You know, like...
$12 for a blanket.
Yeah, you know?
Hashtag.
Or you know, I mean, look, every time I go to Barnes & Noble, I'm like, I'll buy a book just to support the store so they don't close down, right?
It's going to be down to your book, by the way.
Well, but if everybody thinks
if
that.
Only we got $18.63. Oh, Sam.
I know, you know, but look, with the books under $20, it's okay. But
yeah.
When you can get a $30 book on Amazon for $15, how are you going to pay $30 at Barnes & Noble?
You're talking to me. I eBay makeup products because I, not like used ones, like new ones, but I know how to save a couple bucks. I get it.
Right. So,
but I also really love mom and pop shops. Yeah. So like Kuntz Hardware or something like that. Like I'm going to go there before CVS.
Really?
But then if they don't have it, I'll go to
Exactly. That's the thing, you know? We've become like a...
Small business.
Yeah, and corporations and everything. Yeah. But that's been like that a long time.
Yeah.
But, you know,
we are at the peak when the president is Trump. That is the highest of corporations you can literally get to.
Okay.
Literally made fun of in Back to the Future for being... was based on Trump. So it's so interesting because he's like, that's what's going to happen in our future.
Right. But, you know, with the mom and pop, I mean, there were problems when Walmart came into town. And if you remember that, there's still problems like that.
Walmart's.
You know, but they take over and then the mom and pop can't exist.
No.
You know, they can't survive.
No.
So there you go. So closing more stores, Kmart, Sears, Macy's, JCPenney.
God, have you been in a Sears lately? That's depressing.
I know. Well, it was depressing 20 years ago. Nobody was going there.
I thought Sears was real cool once. Wasn't it like you got
it
your things
like
from
Sears?
It was
like a very long time ago.
Okay, like I think so too. Like when they talk like that.
Look, I arrived in this country in the 70s. Already Sears wasn't cool anymore.
Got it. Totally understanding.
Sears is from the 20s.
Okay,
you know?
I think it's got like the Wells Fargo wagon. I think it's like that.
Exactly. Okay. It's from the turn of the century, you know?
Yeah.
Sears and
Robot. And they made houses.
Yeah, Sears whatever,
houses.
You know,
okay,
hardware and, you know, things like that. But it was one of, they started, I think, as a catalog company, you know, back in the 20s, whatever.
They're coming back.
Yeah. So now we have it differently. But, yeah, I mean, how can you beat the convenience and the price?
Yeah, Amazon's having drones come and drop it off at your house soon.
Right.
How are you going to beat that?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll go my ass to Sears and talk to Dave.
Right.
It's not going to happen.
So we've become lazy, too, you know, although we're trying to save money. I mean, you know, again, you're not going to pay double if you don't have to.
But that's why you need competition, so you have that kind of choice.
Exactly, but there is no competition because Amazon's killing everybody.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, they got a great interface.
I know, wow. But, you know, I mean, it just shows you if you have a selection and you have the best prices, you're going to dominate, you know?
Yeah, and also they just...
That's what they...
When you use the word as your actual thing to go shopping, I'm going to Amazon it.
Right.
Or, like, I'm going to use a Kleenex instead of a tissue.
Right.
It's already in the
lexicon.
It becomes
generic.
Yeah.
I've never heard of I'll Amazon it, but now I'm hearing it
really?
For the first time.
Oh, yeah.
I'll
just Amazon it. I guess I may have made that up.
You may have made it up.
Okay, but you know
just
what I mean.
Just like you eBay your makeup.
I do.
Right?
I'm not kidding. I'm not spending
$54 but you say not eBay. It's like a verb.
Oh, yeah. That's something you do. You eBay it. That's a verb.
Okay. I haven't heard that one either.
Well, you aren't living.
I've heard of Google and things
I eBay
like that,
it. Oh, for sure.
Really?
Oh, yes.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
Well, cool. Cool. So, and finally, I just wanted to bring up this thing. Have you heard of like memory athletes? There's a World Memory Championship. And people are saying you're not really born with a good memory. You can actually shape your memory.
So my sixth grade boyfriend won the entire world memory championship in
Malaysia. Are you serious?
Yes. And he wrote a book about it.
So that's not news to you.
Einstein moonwalks. I think it's moonwalking with Einstein. And it's about how to create memory with memory palaces.
Really?
And that's how you do it.
What are memory palaces?
Okay, so this is insane. So, for instance, at the world memory thing, they have decks of cards, and you have to memorize the order shuffled in like a very quick amount of time and repeat it. So instead of thinking like 9-3, jack of spades, whatever, you think of each number as a memory palace, so like really specific. So the 9 would be like in an ice cave with Christy Brinkley eating an Oreo.
Right.
So every time you see 9, you think of Christy Brinkley eating an Oreo in an ice cave.
That's
your memory palace.
So it's associations.
Right, but
which
it is very specific.
Right.
Moonwalking with it. And so it's a very interesting. So he's a really cool guy. Josh Ford, nice. Look him up.
So he won.
He won the whole thing while researching to do it. And his brother wrote Everything is Illuminated, Jonathan Safran Foer. He's a really good author. And yeah, we dated in sixth grade over
cool.
smoothies. Yeah, nice.
Wow.
Yeah. So check it out. Yeah, I did know about that because I'm a nerd.
Yeah, I guess. But I didn't realize that, you know. So maybe I need to start doing this because I burned up so many memory cells over the years.
Yes.
You know, with the weed stuff.
With the weedy weed. Yeah. But here's what you can do is when you meet someone now, there's a book. Like his book is about how to get better about this. You will just think something very specific. Like,
right.
I don't know why I'm doing super models.
But those are not the things I don't remember. I mean, I remember names and faces and stuff. I don't remember things that people tell me, but I think it's because sometimes I don't listen.
Oh.
You know?
There's another issue.
So I don't know. Yeah. So between those two,
knock,
I remember
who's there?
Nothing.
The id. Yeah. But if you really want to remember something they said, let's say I told you something about my childhood, and you're like, I really want to remember Tori in the childhood.
Okay,
you can
gotcha.
Make something. Even if you make that a peanut butter and jelly sandwich in a kitchen, you'll never forget that more than you will trying to remember the childhood story.
Gotcha.
It's interesting. The more specific you get with your whatever you come up with is the better for the memory.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Yeah. But an easier way is don't pick up weed in the first place. All
right. I don't remember what you said. I don't think that's true.
Oh, wow. Well, enough bullshit for one morning.
Yes.
We're going to get to our guest right now. We're joined by filmmaker. She's a producer, director, screenwriter. Everything that you can do to a movie, she's done. Her name is Nancy Payton. Welcome Woo-hoo! To the show, Nancy.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. And a beautiful accent, of course. Are you visiting us or do you live here?
Oh, I'm visiting you. I got here 2 days ago from Saudi Arabia.
Wow.
Saudi Arabia. Well, you don't have an Arabic accent, though. Is that where you grew up, though?
No, I was born in Australia.
Oh, in Australia.
Yes.
How cool. And where in Australia exactly?
I'm from Sydney.
Sydney?
Yeah.
So that's the big city, right?
It's the big city.
That's where everyone in the world wants to just go. If you guys were closer, I'd go every day.
I haven't been there for the last 10 years.
Wow.
I've been a long time away from home. Wow. So,
was childhood like there? Did you have a nice childhood? Was it easy?
I had an interesting childhood. I actually grew up in a very Middle Eastern community, even though I'm actually Polish by background.
Yeah, if you're looking at her, right. This bright blonde, beautiful, like doll, American doll-like creature.
Right.
She's wonderful.
There's nothing Middle Eastern about her.
I went to a, all my friends were from the Middle East or from Asia. Growing up, I was the only blonde and blue-eyed girl. All my friends were from different countries. And then I went to a performing arts high school, which was then in a different area. So all my friends were Australian then and not as multicultural. I had best of both worlds. I had a very multicultural upbringing.
Yeah, definitely. So it's like a diverse thing. You're tolerant to different kinds of people.
Yeah, I'm fascinated by different cultures and people from all around the world. And I've traveled a lot and lived in many countries now. And that's what fascinates me.
How's Saudi Arabia? Are you there living in Saudi Arabia?
Yeah, I've been there for 3.5 years now.
How is that like as a blonde and blue-eyed girl?
Oh, I love it.
I bet.
It's really funny.
She gets all the attention. Yeah, right.
No, it's not like that.
No.
Yeah, I don't get attention. That's for sure. No one looks at you.
No.
It's quite nice to be in your own... it's different.
Oh, really?
It's actually really fascinating. You know, my husband had a choice to go to work in the UAE or Saudi Arabia. And I said, if you go to the UAE, I'm going to stay in London.
Yes.
But if you go to Saudi, I'll go.
Wow.
And everyone's like, why would you want to go there? I'm like, because I'm a writer. I love stories. I love people. I get to meet people that you would never meet anywhere else in the world. And I experience a culture that you'd never get to experience here in America, Australia, or the UK.
It's so different.
Yeah, well, cinema's illegal.
Wow.
So women don't drive, and I have to cover myself
I was going to say, how covered do you have to be completely?
I just have to wear an abaya.
Got it.
My head and my hair can be revealed, but because I'm not Muslim. So as a foreigner, I have to wear the abaya, which is the national dress.
Got it.
And do they allow you to drive, though, since you're not Muslim?
No,
so
not
you can't drive either. So you decided to put yourself in a straitjacket pretty much for 3 years. People can't imagine wanting to move to that kind of a lifestyle where people move away from that.
Well, I think after living in big cities, and I studied in New York, so I lived in New York for 3 years. I lived in London for 5 years, coming from Sydney. I've always lived in our kind of culture, as writing stories about people, I was like, actually, I want to go see what, because people always see it as a negative, their culture, or have a perception of, oh, this is wrong, our way's right. So I thought I wanted to see, well, is it really like that? And actually, it's not. What you see on the outside and when you live there, it's very different. And as I say, I'm not in a straitjacket.
I was thinking about that afterwards, but I mean, to me, it seems like it.
Yes, of course.
But the thing is, because I'm thinking, after you have the freedoms of the West, why would you want to suddenly be treated as someone less than men because they don't allow you to do the things that men do?
I think you've got to focus on the positives, I always say, in life and cultures. And if you always look at the negative, you're going to promote the negative and you're going to get more of it. So I think I've lived there 3.5 years and I focus on the great stuff I do. I work with women there. I educate women. We're doing a lot with film and movies, and things are changing. And it's really exciting to be in a country with so much change happening.
Yeah, so you got to be there to really experience this, to know what it's all about.
Exactly.
How do you work with film there if it is illegal?
So I'm currently, I lecture digital photography and I lecture screenwriting and storyboarding. We don't do film.
Wow.
We are starting, I did a short film there. I filmed a film with 20 women. It was an all female crew.
Wow.
All amateurs, never picked up a camera, never knew what a gaffer was, never knew what, and I taught them everything from A to Z, and then we filmed a film together.
Wow.
And they loved it. And half the women were Saudi, half of them were expat women. I brought these two worlds together and we made a great film. I won awards even though it was an amateur crew. So slowly people are doing that more and more there, and it's slowly they're saying cinema will come in the next year or so.
Wow.
So it's exciting.
You're on the forefront right now. Yeah.
Something different.
That's awesome. Well, so we'll come back to that in a second, to the film and all that, but I wanted to know, so you said you're a storyteller. At what point did you decide you're a storyteller, and what does it mean?
Oh, what point? I think as soon as I can remember, I was a storyteller. I love stories. I said my parents are Polish, so I grew up my first language was Polish, not English, and they had stories from the communist times coming, immigrating to Australia. So all that was always fascinating, hearing their stories, going to Poland, learning their stories. And then again, as I said, I had people from other cultures in my life growing up.
You're like an anthropologist.
Yeah, so in a way, I really had a scientific, but also I love film. I loved film growing up. I watched every film under the sun I could.
Wow.
My first job was in a cinema, actually, when I was 14 years old. And so I think I started writing stories as a child, and then I started loving reading plays and reading stories. And then that turned into filmmaking.
Really? So you would read stories and tell them to other kids or something? I mean, is that what storytelling means?
I guess so. I have a younger sister, so I always read to them and told them stories and made up stories.
Because I can't imagine when you're young, there's that many life stories to tell, right?
But you make up stuff, don't you? I had so much make-believe stories.
I had so much make-believe.
Yeah, me too.
Wow. I was always witches and potions.
Yeah,
and
of course.
I never played with dolls or anything. Again, I was, but then I knew from the very beginning I wanted to be in the arts and act and host, and it was like the same thing. Was just like make-believe was, I took over.
Yeah.
Wow.
So creative.
Exactly. Yeah. I think when you
When you're into that, it comes out early.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I was always having dreaming about another planet or another, something different. Always crazy stuff. I'm a bit of a nutter that way.
Are your siblings also creative?
Actually, I've only got one sibling, a younger sister, about 9 years younger, so a lot younger. So it's more like her mum. That's where the storytelling, I guess, comes. She's studying to be a lawyer.
Oh, wow. Yeah, totally
she's
going different.
She's very different. Yeah,
yeah, but, that's cool.
But you grew up as like an only child for 9 years.
Yeah.
So you got a lot of the firstborn.
Yeah, played. That's, I think when you're by yourself, you make up, your dolls become your life. You start that's creating true. Stuff.
Sort of survival,
time.
You have to.
Exactly. Yeah. So
then you were growing up. What was high school like for you?
High school, as I said, I got into a performing arts high school, which, as I said, my parents didn't really come from performing arts background, and I really loved it. And we found out about this school, so I auditioned. I think there was 2,000 kids that auditioned, only 50 got in. Wow. So I was lucky enough to go to this school, but it was very different to what I was accustomed to.
Right. So did they support you though? I mean,
at first, like my mom always has. So I have a very strong. My dad left. I left us when I was 11, so I don't know my father anymore. And my mom basically always said you can achieve anything, wow. and she was a really hard. Being Women's Week, I think it's important to talk about that. She really worked really hard. She worked night shifts just to kind of keep me and my sister going, and she allowed me to go to this school even though it wasn't something that they were accustomed to and where they came from their culture, and I got to do performing arts. That's and I never great. Went to drama school. I never went to I just did like Polish singing group as a kid, and I got into this school, so they were That's always great. Like, you know, do it. But my mom was always a strong woman, so in a lot of my films that I do, I have strong character females, and I also hire women. As I said, I did the project with all women. This film that I'm here for had 60% women on the crew. I tend to call women first to see if they want to be part of the crew, just because I think it's important to promote women and try and get them into film.
Yeah, and that's also because a lot of the times you just don't get the call.
You don't get the call.
Yeah, if you're a woman sound mixer, you're going to go, sometimes you don't get the call.
Exactly,
so, yeah.
Or a DOP, or a camera assistant, or, you know, because you think you can't lift
stuff. The camera, right.
You can't lift,
right.
Well, of course we can, you know right. what I mean? I'm sorry, I was 6.5 months pregnant when I did this film, and everyone's like, you're pregnant, you can't film. I'm like, well,
yeah,
no.
I can.
Yeah, I can. Wow. Like, I'll pick it up for you. No, I'll pick it up myself. I'm not, good. You know.
Badass. Yeah.
But that's the thing. You don't know. I mean, people don't know how to act sometimes. You know, they don't know what's expected, what's not expected.
Yeah.
So let me pick it up for you. That's how men have always behaved.
My husband's a gentleman, and I love that he always offers. And it is actually really nice. I think it's, and also we should offer as women as well to help men. So it's a two-way thing. And I do love that. But I think when you're working and your work, this is my job and this is part of my job and I can do it, you know,
right.
It's work,
right?
So it's not day to day.
6 months
romancing.
That's amazing. That's yeah. great.
So and then after high school, what did you decide to do then?
High school, as I said, was a performing arts high school, and that was I loved it. I did plays every term. And but, you know, you get older, you get your teens, you start getting you get told you're too fat or you're not pretty enough or you're not this or that, and you start going, actually, I don't really want to be in this industry. And I did, I was really good at science. I did physics and chemistry, and I really loved medicine. As I said, I really have this affinity with science and medicine specifically. So I went into studying that at university, and I left the performing arts completely for 4 years. And I focused on my degree, and I loved it. But something was itching inside. It wasn't completely fulfilling me. I wanted to kind of put the two worlds together, so my performing arts and my medical knowledge. And so I was like, you know what, I did 5 years. I was like, actually, I'm gonna try and go back to performing arts. And I went to New York, and I'd always dreamed about coming to America since a little girl.
Wow.
Ever since Home Alone. I know it sounds
silly. Love how that's my husband's favorite. It's my husband's favorite movie all time.
You know, that New York was always in my dreams of to course. Come, and I came, and I studied there for 3 years, and I loved it. And
so you kind of went back and forth and back and forth.
Till I found myself.
Wow.
Yeah.
And were you always, like, so cool and Buddhist about it, or were you flipping out that you then wanted to go back to performing arts?
I think it was for my mom. She really, really loved that I went to do science and medicine.
Sure.
And I did the 5 years, and I graduated, and I got offered a PhD, and I was like, I've done that. If I want to come back, I'll come back to the PhD when I'm older. But I've got the money.
I can afford myself for a little bit.
Yeah, I want to go and try and do this my way. And she was supportive in the sense of going, okay, you know. And I've never gone back to wanting to go back to that.
But in essence, you realized inside you're a creative person. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You can't do the science.
I'm a people person.
Right,
I love talking to people, listening to their stories. I love traveling. I the psychology behind people, where they come from.
You are an anthropologist.
Yeah. That's and I like to film about it.
Yeah, you're just like a filmmaker. Yeah, you're an anthropologist filmmaker. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the title.
Yeah.
And she investigates how come some people are still, you know, haven't evolved.
That's right.
You know? True. Why they will. Yeah.
Because many people have not, believe me.
I'm noticing.
For those of you joining us, we're talking to a UK director. So you were born in Australia, but you're actually in England now?
Well, see, I film my films in the UK because I was there for 6 years. After I left New York, I moved to the UK. And so that's where all my contacts are. That's where I started actually focusing on filmmaking and working my CV and doing that. Because there's no filmmaking in Riyadh, I do my post-production in London.
That's so crazy.
So those of you joining us again, we're talking to Nancy Payton, visiting us here from Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, that's where I live currently.
Yeah. And why didn't you want the UAE? What was the difference there, the United Arab Emirates?
Well, I think I can go there any day, and it's like Vegas of the Middle East.
So you didn't want that.
She wanted to go back
to the Stone Age, excuse me.
I don't mean to minimize it,
but I'm just representing like the Western idea or the view of what we see from the outside.
I agree. I can see that, and I saw it that way too. But I think if you think about it, it's the most difficult country to get into. It's harder than North Korea to get a visa.
Really?
So my husband was offered a job where we could get a visa, and I am a woman. I was like, why wouldn't we go? Like, I can tick that off a bucket list. You know what I mean?
That's not on my bucket list, but mine is more like watch a couple movies. But still, that's like, you're a brave soul. You just wanted to travel. You're brave. You have that in you.
Wanderlust, they call it. Yeah, I think as we've got, you know, where people ask, where are you from? Like, where's your patriotism? Like, where I'm like, well, I'm patriotic to earth. You know what I mean? Yeah. I don't have I'm Polish or I'm Australian or I'm English or I'm, you know, Middle East. There isn't. I think of the world as one. Like, we are different people living on different countries, but we all live on earth. So,
That's true. You know. Go try to tell that to our president, you know. Right now, he would
be. I love the way you're speaking, Sam.
Well, yeah, I know you do. I know you do, but look, you know.
You got to call him as you see him.
No, that'll never happen. At any rate, so, I mean, this is fascinating to me. So you moved to the UK after you were in New York.
Yeah, so I moved just because I did try and get a green card to stay here, by the way. And I didn't want to stay in New York, but you have a silly policy. I actually had a sponsor. I worked for Michael Miller Films, and he was going to sponsor me to stay. But because my degree was in science medicine, and I wasn't in the performing arts, and he was in the performing arts.
You couldn't stay.
I couldn't stay because I had to have worked in the performing arts for film for 5 years to get... So I wasn't allowed to stay here, even though I tried. Yeah. And I was like, well, you know what? I'm European Union, and I'm going to go to the UK because I can work there. Why didn't I think of this? And I luckily got, you know, I can live and work and pay taxes in the UK. So I went and lived and worked and paid taxes in the UK, in America.
Didn't anybody tell you you could have married an American and just stayed here?
I wasn't ready to get married.
She was too wanderlust.
No.
She had to travel.
Yeah, I wasn't ready. I think my mom always said, you know, wait.
So staying in America wasn't that important to you at that point.
I was wanting to stay and be me, not yet ready to be wife.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you were still young at the time.
Yeah, 25.
So. Yeah, that's not... Yeah. Most people, I guess, at this point, and especially a wild spirit like you, I can't imagine being settling down at 25.
No, I was waiting to 30, and I got settled at 30. So
there you go.
I did my 10 years of travel and fun, and now I'm ready to... be a mummy.
I am a mummy. Are your kids, do you see, how old are your kids?
I've got a 2 and 8 month year old boy.
Wow,
Maximilian, and a nearly 6 month old boy called Alexander.
Oh, nice.
So two boys. There's not much to do in Saudi Arabia. People have children. It's quite a common thing.
You mean there's not much to do, so you do have children.
You do have children. You focus on the child birth.
I see.
Process of making the children.
There's not much else to do. I see.
So you do focus on having children. Which was great. It was perfect timing. It's wonderful to have kids there. They know what they're doing. They have a lot of kids. So, and both my kids were born in Saudi Arabia. So I'm always proud. They're blonde and blue eye, and they're actually Saudi.
Wow.
Like, what's wrong with you?
That's insane. How cool.
It's different.
Yeah, you're the modern female. Totally. Modern mom.
Anyway, we try.
So in terms of films, what kind of films do you like? What kind of films do you like making? What kind of films do you find?
So, like, I don't know if you've seen Lion. So that's like, yeah, I just saw that. So, you know, I have so many favorite films, but that I think is currently my favorite film. I love stories like that. As I said, you know, multiculturalism, you know, bringing out, you know, I love that it was half in Hindi, half in English, half in, they weren't like, oh, I'm Hindu, but I'm going to speak in English now. Right. They were actually, well, this is the language I speak, so I'll keep speaking it. And we got subtitles, which is because it's being real. And that's the reality of the world. And I thought, I love that. That kind of connection of bringing that's me, that's my filmmaking, that's what I'm hoping to, well, that's where I'm going, I think, as a filmmaker, but that's the current film that really got me, I thought.
Yeah
and anything and like that.
So what's Lion about?
It's a true story. So
it's a crazy story.
Really? I don't know how much I can give away because
you can give. He's not going to see it.
In one paragraph, maybe. Can you?
I would say it's about a lost boy in India who he loses him, his brother leaves him at a train station, and he's 6 years old, and he misses a few. But he basically gets put into an orphanage, and this lovely Australian couple adopt him from
Nicole
Australia.
Kidman.
Nicole Kidman, a phenomenally acted piece
she's
of work.
So good.
She's a great actress. And I'm proud. I'm Australian. Yeah. She's Australian. Really. And yeah, so he moves to, but he always was telling them, look, I have a mother. Like I just got lost. I'm home. And they couldn't find his town because, I'm going to cry. And then for 20 years, he lives in Australia and he never looks for them. And he goes out with some Indian kids and they say, but you're Indian. And he's like, no, I'm Australian. He's like, and then like, well, where are you from in India? He's like, I'm from Calcutta. But then he remembered, I'm not from Calcutta, I'm from this town. And then for 6 years he searches on Google Maps and he's trying to find home, trying to find his mother and his real mother.
Yeah.
And I don't want to spoil it, but the story that got to me the most was Nicole Kidman, when she says, I'm going to say, as a mom having two children, she goes, I could have had kids. I chose to adopt kids. She chose to adopt two Indian kids.
Wow.
And she could have had kids because she said, there's enough children in this world. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? I want to, and that is like, for me, it's such a, wow. You, because the whole time you think,
she
couldn't have kids,
right.
But she could.
Right.
And she was like, I want to do good in this earth. And I think there's too many kids that don't have families. I'm going to adopt them. And that was just really got to me. Like,
right. Even if it's just one person, you know, I mean, if everybody thinks that,
just
you know.
You all adopt one child, have a child, have two children.
Yeah.
But also try to adopt that other kid because there are so many kids. And her life, these boys were amazing. This boy grew up to be like an amazing son. And like, you know, a really, really phenomenal film. Like,
it's an excellent film.
Yeah,
very cool.
I was surprised it didn't get more.
It kind of went under the radar, and it was all about him being so cute, the little kid.
And
the story was sort of overlooked, I felt.
Yeah.
And Nicole Kidman was basically totally overlooked.
Yeah.
The acting was great.
The kids were amazing. Like,
yeah.
It's so, you know, it was really hard to find. You know, so natural, so
I know,
real,
totally.
Really real.
Yeah, the cuteness took over from,
I think he was cute, but he was really honest.
Excellent,
And it's a hard role, like a hard, for a kid, a six-year-old kid to play.
Yeah.
Wow. So I just want to go back to England. You moved to England. What did you do there at that point?
Try to survive. England is expensive, and, you know, being new, you do have to make, it takes time. I think any new city you go to, like even me, Saudi Arabia, it's taken me a good 3 years to kind of, now I know Saudis, I'm really happy there, I've got like a life, I've worked out how it works. Same thing with London, took me 3 years to call it home, to kind of find the right people, make the right friends. You make friends initially, right? But then they're just that initial friends, the real bonds, the real connections, you know. And then I made some great friends and in the industry, and but it takes a while to then be able to be trusted. So I worked at Great Ormond Street Children's Hospital. Because I have a medical degree.
I was gonna say, so you went back. You go back and forth.
Yeah,
well, she had to survive.
I know, it's
right?
So smart. It's
so
smart.
It's a day job.
So you have to have a day job, and you have to, you know, as much as I was writing my films then, and I worked at Great Ormond Street, and then I met a little girl called Maisie Keach, who had she was 4 years old then, and she had a condition, a terminal condition, which is incurable, called EB, and it's a skin condition. They're called butterfly children. They have no skin. They're born without skin or blistering skin.
Oh,
and
my God.
I wrote a story about her because she was just fascinating. She had so much energy for a four-year-old, but she's not going to live. That, you know, that's the reality of the condition. Her family, they have to take 6 hours a day of bandaging them from every day. They have to rebandage. It takes 6 hours just to, and the agony, the pain. You're ripping someone. You're waxing.
Mm-hmm.
If you think about it, you know.
Oh my God.
So I wanted to tell this story about this girl. So I wrote a feature film initially about this girl called Daisy. I called the film Daisy. She's Maisie, but I called it Daisy. And then I tried to find people to help me bring this film to life and try and funding. But a first-time filmmaker, you know, it's never this. So I cut it to a short film, the screenplay, and then I did find the funding for a short film, and I got it made. And I really wanted the kids with EB in the film, and that was a big thing. I actually wanted Maisie to play Daisy. Mm-hmm. And everyone was like, you can't do it. She's too ill. She might not be able to be on set for the hours that you need her on set. And that was really hard, because in my gut, I was like, she can do it. She mm-hmm. can do it. But in the end, you got to go with the investor and you got to do it, make sure the movie's done. And so I didn't have her in it. I gave a supporting role in the film, but she was there every day on set. She came. Really? Even though she wasn't, she wanted to be there. It was like she was hoping. A month before we went to production, she was actually really ill, and her mum didn't think they would survive. And the only thing that kept her was that she was going to be in Daisy.
Yeah.
And then everyone, when you watch the film, everyone's like, she was amazing. Mm. Like, she brings up, she could have been Daisy. I'm like, I know, that's what I said from the beginning.
You're
like,
damn it.
I'm like, I get it. I'm just starting off. I understand, you know? So it takes a while to, you know, but I stuck to my guns in letting them be in the film, because they were the ones that inspired me to write the story.
What's the name of that film?
Daisy.
Oh, wow.
Daisy. So, but also I think you learned that you don't have to have the real person do the character, right? If you get a good actor.
Oh, yeah, she was wonderful.
That's what a movie is about.
And having the real actor meet the girl, and I had all the actors wanting to meet the mom as well and to talk to them about what it's like. We did a documentary about the filming and about their lives and Maisie's life. And of course, yeah, I think on set, everyone was so respectful of the topic. And I actually got everyone on board. Most of the people were parents in my crew, because when they read the script, they were like, oh my God, if I had a child like this. And I got people that are really talented on board for basically no money as a short film, because they want to tell the story. That was because it was such a, you know, the reality of this illness and this condition. I was really blessed to have that, you know, being a parent and having other parents, and we all worked to bring this story alive about what it's not only like for the child, but for the family and the relatives that have to help each other to bring these kids up. You know,
right.
It's amazing. They're really phenomenal. It's different.
Yeah. So okay. So, and when did you release? When did you release that movie?
Well, we went on a festival circuit the last year, and it was picked up, so the distributor, we've sold it now, and it should be coming out in the next 2 months.
Damn, girl, congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you.
That's fantastic.
Yeah,
it's not easy to get distribution at a festival, for sure. Yeah.
So we're really blessed that did happen. But it took a while, you know, it takes a while. I don't know anyone on the circuit. It's a different, you know, making a film and then learning the festival circuit. Again, different part of the business. So it's all a learning curve, taking your time and figuring out, oh, okay, this is how you do it. This is, you know.
Right.
But you get there.
Now, so It was difficult at the beginning because you were starting filmmaker and everything, but did you feel there was a hindrance by the fact you were a woman?
I think, you know, I'm not going to say there's a hindrance. No, like, I think anyone who's up and coming, female or male, it's going to be hard, you know, so males have it too. And I don't think it's that. But what happens is you do, because it's a male dominant industry, you know, women they don't have the CVs to prove themselves sometimes. In that sense, I guess. So it is harder because I don't have the CV behind me. And, you know, I don't want to say it's a hindrance, but, you know, it took time. I think it was because
More obstacles.
There's more obstacles, and also because we decide to get married or have children and we take some time off. You know, and that's one thing I haven't tried to do. I'm still working and being a mum, and I love it. And I do, because I have two boys, and I want them to know that a mum does work, a woman does work, and to respect that. And I've decided to keep working because I want my sons to respect women that work. But, you know, I did take some time off. I took 6 months off because I also wanted to be a mum. And it's torn every day.
Yeah.
I want to be with my boys. I want to see them. But I also love my career, and I want my kids to respect that women have a career as well.
Good for you.
That's awesome.
Good for you.
Well, we're going to get to the movie you're here for. But one thing I wanted to ask is, so you ended up in Saudi Arabia. Your husband got a job there, right?
Yes. Yeah.
How did you meet your husband? That's what we want to know.
Oh, that's I'm going to write a movie about it one day.
Really?
not just yet. We were, as I said, I think, oh, it's crazy. I didn't think you'd ask this.
Really? Well, if you don't answer,
oh,
please.
Oh no, actually, I think it's important. I think you're right.
Because it sort of has to complete the circle.
Yeah.
We have to know how he fits.
How it ended?
Here, right?
Yeah. It was so funny. I was engaged before my husband, in the UK, and I had a horrible relationship. And a year before I met my husband, I actually was off dating. I think I dated, you know, had boyfriends. And I was like, you know, I'm done. I'm just going to focus on my career, and I'm really just going to. You know, I'm going to do what, you know, why did I, just going to focus. And yeah. I didn't expect, and I dated someone really nice. I did go on a date with a really, and I said, I'm going to date nice guys.
Nice guys. That's right.
I'm going to like.
No more jerks.
Exactly. And I was like, you know what? And if a guy was actually nice, I would actually, you know, I was like, okay, I'll go on a date. But as soon as I noticed there was no chemistry or anything, I'd be quite honest.
That's the problem with nice guys.
But my husband's a nice guy.
I know, mine too. Mine's a little baby. I love him.
A real nice guy. But I dated someone just before him, and we went on 3 dates, and I really wanted to date this guy because we were just a really nice guy, and he was Scottish and tall, a lot of features that like my husband
yeah.
is, really close to my husband, but he just wasn't the one, right? And so maybe in the future you'll like me, maybe I'm like I've tried Friend. 3 dates, oh, no. It's not gonna happen.
It wasn't there, huh? The chemistry
there.
just
wasn't there, yeah. And I was like, but. I nearly found the one I want. Like, I get it.
You're
like,
almost there.
I'm almost there. Like, I think it was a month and a half later. We have one mutual friend, me and my husband. One mutual friend. Mm-hmm. But he, as I said, my husband lived in the UAE, and he was already working there. And I was in London. So there's no way we're ever going to meet through this friend. And our friend had an event. Happened to have an event. And I was helping him with the event, because I was doing a lot of events in London, working with events at that point, massive corporate events. And he did an event, and my husband happened to be in London that night, and I was going to fly out for another job, but I decided to stay. And my husband, his hotel was next to the event, and he walked in. I literally went up to him. He walked down the stairs. I saw
it's him. Like Cinderella, but in reverse.
And I went up to him and said, "Hi, I'm Nancy." And he went like, "Hi, I'm Richard." And I was like, "Do you have a business card?"
Oh my god.
And then he was like, okay, I took it, put it in my bra. Okay.
He's
like,
and that's not something you would do normally.
No, I literally just went like.
You see, it's like it was preordained almost.
It was so weird. And then he's like, do you know where Marcus is? I was like, oh, you know Marcus. Oh, great.
I have someone to talk about.
I was like, Marcus is over here. And then I left him. And then he kept running around. And then he was like, where do you live? He was doing part-time work in Saudi then. He's like, oh, I'm in Saudi Arabia. I said, like, I've always wanted to live in Saudi Arabia.
Oh, man.
And then he was like. What is wrong with this woman? She wants to live in Saudi Arabia. And then, so I started asking my friend questions about him. And then he started asking, and so we found out he's a really nice guy. He's like the nicest gentleman. He's an English gentleman.
Wow.
And then 5 months later, we were married.
Wow. That's adorable.
5 months later, and we married
for like
4 years.
You could escape this fate. I mean, it just hit you. So happened.
But we were very blunt with each other. On top, he's like, we really wanted to date me. And I was like, okay, I'll date you for 3 months. But, like, I'm going to tell you who I am, what I believe in, and if you don't agree with it,
see
you later.
Yeah, yeah.
And, like, I was really done about dating. I'm like, I'm tired of dating. Like, you know what? I don't like this. I don't like that. Don't do that. And if you do it, and if you decide to go and look at, you know, cheat with another woman, whatever, don't bother. Just tell me. It's okay. Just like,
yeah, the romance was gone. Yeah.
Like, if you really want to go, just please go. Like, don't, like, try to stay.
Exactly.
Make this
but
work.
Don't think if you're going to put your pee-pee in somebody else, you're going
like,
to come back
bam,
to me.
Bam. And that's how it gets when you're ready to find the one and your light is on. You're like, Mama needs to cut the bullshit.
Yeah, cut the bullshit. Yeah, yeah, and like he was also coming out of it, and he was also cutting the bullshit. And so, and there was some, there was a few things that we have different views on, but we then worked out, is this the different view that we can live with or not? Because we're never going to find Mr. Perfect or Mrs. Perfect. You're going to have some differences, I think.
Right.
And that's healthy. But majority was very like the same. So it was really...
I like that you went straight up to him. Do you have a business card?
I need to know. Like, I was like, I need to know this guy's for real, because London as well, it's like LA probably, and like New York, it's all a lot of bullcrap sometimes.
Yeah,
bullcrap.
Yeah. No,
that's
true.
You can say bullshit. It's
you
okay.
can say bullshit. You can say whatever. Like, but listen,
reality people.
Yes.
Just be honest. Who are you? Tell me. I'm
a real person.
Yeah, and you're a real person.
Yeah.
Be real.
Yeah. We're running out of time, and you're here for your new film.
Yes.
Choke.
Yes.
Okay. Wow. That's I mean, what comes to mind when you think?
I'm reading 50 Shades of Grey. So.
Oh really? Is that where you're going with that one? Okay. I didn't.
Then
realize.
I think artichoke because I'm a little bit hungry. I want to hear about it.
Tell us.
So Choke was it was part of a 40 40 film projects. So 48 hours, you have to make a film.
Wow.
Yeah. And I've always wanted to do this challenge, but I'm now going into feature films. So I was like, if I don't do it now, I probably won't, because I won't go back to shorts, or I will, but not this kind of competition. I've always wanted to see if I can do it. So you're basically, you're not allowed to do anything before you press start, apart from pick your locations and your crew.
Wow.
And so in my head, I'm like, okay, I've got 48 hours. I'm making a movie. It's got to look good. At least it's got to visually look good. So I looked for two locations. As I said, I like worlds, different worlds. So I picked a dungeon and a manor house in the UK, very wow. opposing locations. And then I picked my crew. 60% were women. We tried to really get more women involved. I picked a day. I was 6.5 months pregnant.
What?
I had one weekend. Yeah. I picked a weekend. I'm filming it then, because then I'm going to be too pregnant. So let's just film it that weekend. And I found the crew that could do it. Amazing filmmakers that I love in the UK that I've worked with before. Some I wanted to work with. And then you're about to press. You pick a time and you have to press start. And then they give you an element. So they give you a prop. They give you a character. And they give you a line that has to be in the
wow.
film. Right? And then you have to write it. Film the film, edit it.
So you have no idea of what the plot, who they are.
Nothing.
Okay, nothing.
So you don't know. You only know your locations, and you only know your crew, and you know your actors. So you've got actors on standby. I had runners that could be actors in case we needed more people, but they were runners, helpers. So we had two actors that I wanted to keep the story simple, but if I needed more, we would have extras on set ready to go. And so that was what we had planned. And then we got to, like, we decided to press at 9 a.m, but we were like, me, my writer, my assistant, we were like, okay, let's just press it. 4 minutes before we had to press it, because I'm like, I need to know what that stuff is. Like, because we were coming up with, like, he's going to be an astronaut with a giraffe pet. Like, we were like, what are we going to get? You know, we're like, our minds were like going crazy. Maybe it'll be like a fireman. And then, like, you know, she's like, we had no idea. And we've got a dungeon and a manor house.
Yeah,
like,
what are you going
to
do?
What are you going to do, right? So it was like really itching to know. But we were like, we got amazing stuff. We got, the prop was a headband, okay. which originally in the script we had the girl wearing, and then we're like, why would every girl always wears a headband? Let's put it on the guy.
Nice.
You know, because, like, let's make it different. And then we got, she was a makeup artist, so we made her daytime makeup artist, nighttime dominatrix.
Obviously.
And because she's a spiritual being, and we'll talk about that later. And then we had, the line was, are you sure this is safe?
Wow.
Well, could you get any more? We're like, oh my God, thank you. Like, whoever is, it was so we, and then we sat down, we started writing, and I'm very medical, so I knew I always want to bring awareness to a condition. So we decided the film is basically about a man with his last stages of prostate cancer, and he's basically trying to get a hold of his life and having control over it and seeking spiritual awakening or release. And that's the story plot line.
Wow.
That's what I'm going to give away.
Okay,
nice.
So we don't know how Choke is related to it. We have to watch the movie.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like I said, it's in the dungeon. So this
I'm picturing the dungeon. Yeah, the red room. The 50
now the
shades.
Dungeon was decided by you or the competition?
No, her.
No, me. The locations were.
So how did the, okay? So how did you get? How did you end up with the dungeon then? How did you pick that?
Funny, I really wanted something visually different and colors, and I was looking for something that we could play with, props, something that was different. And again, it's a short competition. You're writing a script. You want to have something interesting, something different, juxtaposing worlds. I actually did work in a bar in New York, and on top of it, we had a dungeon.
Mm.
And I used to have the dominatrix come in and tell me their stories, and I thought they were fascinating. I was like, oh, this is like so different. Not my cup of tea, but, you know, definitely I was intrigued. I was mm-hmm. like, oh, I really would have... And it was crazy. When we got into the dungeon itself, I've never been in one, and all the crew were like, what is all this stuff? And
it's
we're like,
really creepy.
We were like, we had no idea, because again, you know, you can't prepare with props. So it's like, if we have somewhere that's got props, then
it
we
already
know what
has
to do.
Them. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's not about that. It really is. It's about this guy, as I said, he's trying to, it's about spirituality, really, and having that, finding who you are at that last moment of your life.
Mm.
So that's what we focused on, because it was about him. It wasn't about her.
Right.
It's
really
interesting,
it's about,
when you have short amount of time, you do something with the highest amount of stakes. So, like, he's on the edge of dying.
Exactly.
What can he do to find that spiritualism?
Exactly. And I think that's what we focused on, because it is important. Like, you know, you are out of control when you're in your last stages, and you do, there are people that want to, you know, they have the choice to take. If that's, why should we tell them when they should die? If they're dying, you know, I think that's something I was trying to bring up, that conversation about, you know, whose choice is it? And are we the ones to say if that, you know,
And ownership of that question.
That was something I was really, we were exploring as writers. And my writer, who I love, she's a dark writer, and I'm kind of dark and crazy as well. So we went down a rabbit hole. Yeah, I was like, you know, we had it.
Well, this sounds amazing. You know, I mean, the thing is that, and then tonight is a special night for you.
Yes.
What's happening tonight?
So tonight's the screening of the film. The 48 film project is a competition, and I really was excited to do this one because it's an amazing prize. There's also, it gets to be screened at the Directors Guild of America, which I've, you know,
DGA.
As a director, you want to have your stuff screened there. You want to be a part of it one day. And that was, so tonight at the Directors Guild, we've got the screening of the top films. I think there was like 100 films. They narrowed it down to 30, then they narrowed it down to 15.
And you're in that.
Yeah, yes. We've been nominated for very 7 cool. awards out of 10, which is exciting.
Whoa.
We've been, most nominations.
So you can really get like a mark here. This is a good way to get started.
Yeah.
Right. A name out.
Yeah, so we've got, and as a team, we've been working on a feature film together idea that we've been writing, and we've got in the pipeline. So we're hoping this will inspire to filming at the end of the year, this feature film. And I've got a few other things that I'm filming right now as well. So yeah, it was basically why we're here, why we flew over all the way. And
So tonight's the night.
Cool. Yeah. Tonight's the night.
Wow, choke.
So
choke,
now,
choke.
Can people go and see this movie tonight?
I think they are selling some tickets, I noticed online.
Where is it going to be? Let's see.
Directors Guild?
The Directors Guild of America.
Yeah. Okay. It's tonight at 7 p.m., world premiere of the movie Choke, Nancy Payton.
That's amazing.
Yeah, now that you know everything about her, let's find out really what she can do on film.
Yes.
And I'm... And then after this, where would you distribute the film?
So if we win, mm-hmm. then they own it for a year. So it's their property, because then you get the big prize, which is filming a feature film with them. Which
so
is
that's
exciting.
The prize.
Yeah. So being a part of a feature film that is in production, I think, and which is exciting. But I think after that, we can take it further. But I think, I think with Choke, I never saw it. It was more the experience of filming on the spot, the adrenaline for 48 hours. As I said, I was 6.5 months pregnant, no sleep, just filmmaking from,
unbelievable.
And that was the experience, and to be nominated.
There you go. Superwoman, all the way from Australia,
from
around
Week.
The world.
Bravo.
Via New York and London, ends up in Saudi Arabia. Now she's here visiting us in L.A. Nancy, we're totally out of time. Tell people how they can find more about you. Do you have social media, website, anything maybe for the film?
I've got an Instagram, nancy.payton, which has most of the stuff. Facebook, Choke the Film. You can find me on Twitter, nancy.payton, Payton Productions. So you can go there. But
awesome.
Nice. Thank you so much.
Awesome. Of course. Well, of course. Thank you so much for joining
us.
Thank you for
very fascinating.
I feel like a lazy ass compared to her. This happens every time.
Because of my mother. I blame on my mother.
Yeah.
She's hardworking. And now
type A. I love it.
I know. And we didn't even have time to even talk about so many other things. So you're welcome back anytime. Good luck to you in the competition, really.
Yeah. We'll be thinking about you. I'll be checking in, making sure you win.
And you have good odds, because some people that have been here on the show ended up winning an Oscar,
yes,
too.
They did.
Yeah, so for short films. So there you go. You're on your way there,
Thank you.
It's going to rub off on you. Don't worry about it.
Thank you.
Yeah. But you're talented yourself. You can do it on your own.
thank you
again, Nancy.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks, Rachel and Amy, for making it happen. Tori, thank you as always.
Have
a great day, everybody. And we'll see you tomorrow.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Tori, only on LA Talk Radio.